And welcome back to Coast. We're with Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes. We call her Dr. E or Dr. Estes. Dr. E, I do not think evil will ever go away. I think that would be great in a perfect world. I don't think it's going to happen. What do you think?
I'd agree with you. You know, my grandmother used to say that after the seventh day of creation, when God rested, on the eighth day, he created religion. And on the ninth day, the devil showed up and said, I'll organize it for you.
Yeah, and that's what happened.
Yeah. I believe it is on this planet anyway. It is a force that continues. But again, to contain it, to be aware, educated, conscious about it, and incidentally, not to try to punish, I'm not sure that that's the right attitude toward it, but it is to limit, to restrict, most definitely.
Why is it so evil to restrain and difficult?
Well, again, people often say after the fact they didn't realize, because they don't know the symptomatology of the difference between eccentricity and, let's not say evil, let's say people who don't have an empathic response to other persons and beings, who act compulsively and have grandiose and bizarre and delusional ideas about that others ought to be punished or cleansed. Our culture is not, I always say we shrinks have not done a good job of it. There's a whole idea that even people who have slight, you know, differences, variances in mental behavior ought to be punished and put in institutions and so on. And that's not true at all. I mean, yeah, they might be a pain in the neck from time to time, but aren't we all, right?
Sure.
And so they have different, you know, twitches and ways of being that, you know, sometimes aren't compatible with a consensual reality. But they're not a danger to themselves or to others, not even a little bit.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Austin, Texas to get things going with Beth, east of the Rockies. Hi, Beth. Go ahead, please.
Hi, George.
Hi,
Dr. E. I read A Woman Who Run with the Wolves many years ago, and it was a very healing book for me. I've given it as a gift several times. A few months ago, I did a house blessing on my apartment, and a few weeks ago, it was burglarized, and it's such an invasion and a violation in addition to what was taken, and 2 weeks after that, my car gets hit, and when bad things just keep happening, but especially with the burglary, you know, I want to get things together and like do another house blessing, but part of me feels like, what's the point? The first blessing, what good does that do? And I don't really believe that, but it's hard not to feel it.
Right. I would just say this to you, that it's like breaking a vase when there's been an invasion. You know, it's like, and you have to put the vase back together, and it will have seams now. It'll have some cracks in it, but you put it back together piece by piece. And one part is to re-bless your house. Go ahead and do that. Another part is to say, I can't make any sense of that, and just allow that to be what it is. And say, I don't want this to happen anymore, which is true, of course, and let that be also as it is. And then go see if you can't find something in what happened so that you can help other people. See if there isn't a diamond in the midst of all of that murk that is new and different for you, that you actually come out with something that is good and that is powerful, rather than feeling that this is simply something that happened to you. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes. He dumped out some of my medications and left some other medications that he probably would have wanted to take laying there, and I thought, he must not be able to read.
Could be.
And I actually had
could
the be. Thought of, I wish I, you know,
yeah.
I wish you could give me back my stuff and I could teach you to read.
Right. See, that's an impulse, though. That's an impulse of goodness that comes out of the dark. And I would go and stay with that and go ahead and re-bless your house. And take good care of yourself, and I will keep you and other people who have been intruded on that way in my prayers. I promise you.
Thank you. I'm going to read more of your book. Thanks a lot.
Okay, let's go next to Roger in San Francisco.
Before you go,
who?
George.
She's gone.
Before you go.
I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, before, before we go to the next person, that's very important that people have their own way of re-blessing themselves once they've been violated. That you asked earlier, how can people help themselves? That's one of the ways. You listen to what they say is meaningful to them, even as they try to refute it, and you revalidate it for them, because it's true.
I think you combat evil by carrying a concealed weapon and protecting yourself.
I have a CC. Do you?
I do.
Okay. So I guess we are brothers and sisters after all.
Reciprocity in most states. Not all of them.
That's
not all
true.
Of them.
Well, some of them you have to break it down before you can take it over state lines.
Okay. Back to the calls. Greg, truck driving in South Carolina, first-time caller. Go ahead, Greg.
Hi, George, Dr. E. It's quite an honor. And Dr. E., I had a question and a story for you. I was a military police officer in D.C. For the Marine Corps several years ago, and I had a friend that worked at Alexandria Police Department in Virginia, and did a ride-along with him, and he offered for me to meet Zacharias Missali, which was explained later, I believe, was the 19th hijacker that didn't make it to his plane on time on September 11th. And he obviously was in confinement, but the question I have is, when I spoke to him, I looked in his eyes, and he had the most just blank, scary, I've never seen anybody like that, never felt the way I felt before. I looked in his eyes, there's just like nothing there. Is there any kind of explanation you've come across with this? I know you spoke of it earlier, and I just wanted to ask that, and George, Semper Fi, brother.
You got it, my friend. Thank you. Go ahead, Clarissa.
I would just say to you that, what's your first name?
He is gone.
Oh, he's gone. Yeah, all right. Gone. What I would say to him is that more important is for him to re-bless himself from having that experience. More important is for him to, you know, we do this different ways. We pray for ourselves. We have a mass said in curanderismo, which is the Latino healing tradition. We do a limpias, which is a cleansing, often with water, to not be stuck on that memory, to not try to explain it, because he'll never be able to explain it, probably. You know what I'm saying? Remember, we said rationally you cannot explain certain things. The other thing is, we don't know how that particular person was treated for the weeks before he was met by other people. We don't know what people actually did or said to him. I remember seeing a photograph, and I'm not saying this about that particular person who was being held, but I remember seeing a picture of a prison guard from Dachau after the camps had been liberated, and he had been beaten within an inch of his life, and he too appeared that his soul had stepped out of him and was no longer present. So we don't know what actually has happened to people, or if in the aftermath of what they may have participated in, that is abject evil, that they have been returned to their sanity and consciousness again, and they can hardly face themselves. We don't know. We just don't know. But it would be important for a person who beheld a person in that condition to cleanse themselves, to come back to their center of life and the living, and then not be fascinated in any way, shape, or form with what they saw.
Okay, let's go to San Francisco, west of the Rockies. Hey, Roger, go ahead.
Hi, George. I wonder if I could challenge what seems to me an inconsistency in some of the definitions of good and evil being used here tonight and other shows on Coast. My contention is that society's allowing homelessness to exist en masse in the large numbers that it does is pure and simple, is evil. That is to say, it is, by her, the doctor's definition, inhumane neglect of other humans, particularly other innocent humans. And most homeless people are, in fact, innocent if you listen to their stories of what happened to them, and it's not so different of things that could happen to the rest of us. Now, how can you have it both ways? I mean, you would like to believe that 95% of the people on Earth are good people, yet it's those same 95% who step over homeless people every day. So where is the conscience that I'm hearing is supposedly supposed to be there? It's either you have conscience or you don't. And
I think conscience is not the issue with regard to homelessness. I think action of the conscience is the issue with homelessness. What I tell people, and believe me, your question is a heartfelt one. I know it is. And also, it's true. But also, people become overwhelmed with all the needs all around them. And what I tell them is, do what you can that is within your reach. Repair the part of the world that is within your reach. And if you will do that in whichever way that you're called to do that, then you will be doing what you're called to do. And that's what we can do. When George was talking earlier about the global quality of evil and how he thinks that it will always be with us in the world, I think that's probably true, too. I think that there's a difference between people who can't do it all and people who ignore it all. There's a big difference between those two kinds of people. And the majority of the people in the world try to help in many, many ways. The thing is, it never hits the media.
No, that's true. You know, if just one person would care about another and they just multiplied,
right,
it would grow.
Sermon on the
Mount. It's not gonna end it, but it sure would grow.
Sermon on the Mount.
Yep, absolutely. Next up, we go to Patty in Houston, Texas, east of the Rockies. Hey, Patty, thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to your show every night, and I'm addicted to it.
Well, perfect. It's the perfect addiction. It won't hurt you.
That's right, except that it keeps me up all night, and I can't get enough of it. The purpose for my call, I grew up with a girlfriend that was into witchcraft and Ouija and tarot cards and black arts and things, black witchcraft and things like that growing up. And I had some very strange experiences with her. We did things when I was younger with Ouija boards and things like that, but she claimed that she was a witch. And I really believe she was. She moved to New Orleans at one point of her life, and when we had got separated as we grew up, and she had opened a voodoo store there with potions and used to make voodoo dolls on people. And then she had contacted me years later. I hadn't seen her about 12 years, and we agreed to meet together in my hometown, and she came and picked me up, and the night she came, she brought her boyfriend with her. They both claimed to be witches and warlocks, which I thought was kind of crazy. She was kind of crazy growing up with. So long story short, they picked me up, and it was pouring down, raining. I mean, pouring down, and it was about 9 o'clock at night. They said, "We have a surprise for you." And I said, "Oh, I can't wait to see this one." They took me to a cemetery at night and went into the mortuary and lit candles in this mortuary, and there was a square hole in the wall, you know, where they put, I guess, for the caskets to go in or the remains to go in.
Yeah.
And they had a little gold rod with a little curtain hanging in the front. And she crawled up into that hole with candles and crawled in there and was meditating or trying to bring in these spirits in there. And I was scared to death. I was stuck with them. I had no way to get back home. And here we are in the middle of the night in this mortuary. She proceeded to take the little curtain off the square in the wall and put it in her purse, as well as take candles and these little angels and cherubs off the walls. We went to her. She said, "You need to come home and stay the night with me, and I'll bring you home tomorrow." Well, I went to her house, and when we pulled up, she had plastic flowers all planted in the yards, and they were from cemeteries. We went into her house. She had sewn all these little curtains together that she had got out of all these different mortuaries and sewed them together and had big curtains all through her house. She had cards and candles and pictures of, jewelry and things that she had taken. She would go to funerals and sit in the back of the funerals and would go up at the end of the funeral with people she didn't even know and would bring something back from that funeral and bring their spirits back in seance. I was scared to death to stay the night there, and you can understand, it was really creepy, and I wound up going home the next day. Everything was okay for that night, but years later, I never heard from her again. She called me up and said she'd been trying to find me, that she was now an FBI agent working with the police department, and that her job was going to scenes where people had been stabbed and cut, and she could tell what type of murder it was, if it was a crime of passion, or what kind of knives they used, and also rebuilds people's faces with clay or whatever from people that have died and they don't know who they are. And that's what she does.
How about that?
And this is the true story, I swear. And that I can tell you so many more that happened with her. And as well, things that have happened with me over the years that I could probably take a whole year or show.
All right. Thanks for your comments.
Thank you. I just want to say that voodoo, or voodan, as it's actually called, is an actual religion, as is Wicca, also is an earth religion. And there are people in every religion, as you know, who do things that are not considered toward the good, you know, not making any judgment whatsoever about the story. But it's true of all religions, unfortunately. And I think that the people that are thieving from the dead without permission of various and sundry, the ancestors, the family, the so on and so forth, that would, you know, I would have some questions about what actually was going on there.
What do you think of serial killers? Would you say they are evil, sick, what?
Well, personally, I would say that they're ill. That they, again, they have no conscience. They have no empathic response to others. They.
But they're brilliant in some cases, the way they plot out what they're doing.
Actually, intelligence has nothing to do with insanity.
No, that's true.
You can be just incredibly brilliant. And many people are brilliant scientifically. It's very interesting, like Ted Kaczynski, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Very smart guy.
Have you ever faced off with evil, George?
I think so. Off and on. I mean, not directly with murderers or anybody like that, but, you know, people who just weren't good people, you know,
right.
who were evil. I've been pretty fortunate not to be around them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't think I want to be around them.
No. I
don't know how you can do what you do.
I think that's, well, you do it because you see the harm that's been done and you want to help. You want to help people be restored again.
All right, Dr. E, we're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Fast night tonight. We're going to take final phone calls with you. I'll also tell you what's in store on our next show. We'll be right back. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're talking about psychics and also the afterlife investigations as we go live to Europe. So make sure you're part of that program. When we come back in a moment with Dr. E, we'll take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. E, do you like doing what you're doing? Is it one of those jobs that you would just do all over again?
You know, the way I'd put it to you is that when you have a calling, it's something you must rather than want to. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You must do it. And, you know, I find it difficult, challenging, but also... it feels right. You know, if a calling makes you feel like you're doing what you were asked to do.
It's your passion.
That's right. It's by one greater. Not everyone can do that kind of work. And those of us who do that kind of work, who work with victims of great tragedies, traumas, critical incidents, shootings, murders, and natural disasters, and so forth, we are a group who are not unhurt by what we see or hear. It hurts us. It breaks us in a sense of hurts our hearts. But also, I've not yet met a post-trauma specialist who doesn't have a really strong calling and belief in one greater.
Okay, to the phones we go again. Let's go to the Redlands in California. Terry's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Terry, thanks for holding so long.
Oh, thank you, George.
Sure.
It's a privilege to speak with you both. Something that's been on my mind lately is part of the pervasive feeling of evil walking the land is not only these horrible shootings that are occurring and war and all of the other many ills that go on, but this sort of corporate evil is what I think of it as, that has been going on with things, everything from the milk coming from China that's laced with heaven only knows what, that's going to babies, and GMOs that, you know,
tainted dog food, everything.
Yeah, the corporations know it's not good for us, yet they're still promoting it. And you talked about, you know, the inhumane treatment of others being, you know, one of the symptoms of evil. And I can't help but think that this is, you know, these people have no conscience. And I just wondered if you could address that.
It's an interesting point, Clarissa.
Well, I think, don't you think that she said it? I mean, that there are some people who put money, you know, manan before concern and regard for humans, right? And as you said, that's not new. That's ongoing. But then the question becomes, what shall we do to know about it in advance, to predict it, and to contain it? How shall we do that? To resist it at the very least, and certainly to contain it at the very most. I think those are the questions that each individual has to ask themselves, because so many of these issues are local. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, earlier we talked about evil, and you said it was genetic. I wanted to push you into the area of the devil.
Right.
Let me
go back and just say what I said was that some people who commit unspeakably evil acts appear to have a lack of a conscience, that there is almost no explanation for it. They begin showing it at a very young age. And one of the things that I have theorized about it is that it may be a genetic issue that's similar to a form of retardation.
But you do not believe in the biblical version of the devil, or do you?
That's a really hard question to ask a Catholic, don't you think? I would say that
I'm not sure I'm going to get the religious answer from you.
I would say I see the manifestations of people harming one another. And it can be called by many different names. And the question still remains, what shall we, as responsible, accountable human beings, do about what is within our reach to do? Well, how will we educate ourselves? How will we reach out to help and also to contain when needed? I have an email here from someone. George, if it would be all right with you, I'd like to respond to it. It says, sounds like you think all schizophrenics should be locked up, and then he goes on to call me a Nazi. So, but because he doesn't know my family. He doesn't know my father's family was murdered by the Nazis. So, but we won't go there right now. What I do want
to say... He just outright called you a Nazi.
What I do want to say is this. Sounds like you think all schizophrenics should be locked up. We don't call people by their illness. You have heard me say on your program, people who suffer from schizophrenia, people who have schizophrenia, we don't call people by their clinical or medical diagnosis. We don't call people, well, you're a diabetic. We don't say that. We call them humans, and then they suffer from a disorder or a medical condition. So I just want to say that for the audience, because it's an old-fashioned way of looking at people to take away from their humanity by calling them by this one prominent feature that they may have through no fault of their own, incidentally. They don't get up in the morning and decide, I'm going to be outside the realm of caring for other humans. They don't decide that.
Let's go to Tacoma, Washington. Chris is with us, first-time caller. Hi, Chris.
Hi, George. I'm really very happy to speak with you and Dr. E.
Yeah.
I consider myself to be what you'd call a normie, but about 20 years ago, I was living a much racier life, and which included drugs and stuff. But I hope that I'm not off subject. Considering your very last conversation, I don't think I will be. But I was in a motel room with a friend of mine, to make a long story short, it was about 3:30 in the morning, and it sounded like somebody had started a vacuum cleaner in the next room, and I thought that was very odd, being 3:30 in the morning. And then a door opened and slammed shut, and then another one, and then another one. It sounded like it was starting at the end of the hall and was coming all the way down this motel, you know, one door after another, and it was coming to, you know, down to our room. So I stood at the door, and I was holding this doorknob with my, you know, white knuckling this doorknob, because it was getting very close, and the doors kept opening and shutting, and I'm looking through the peephole at what's coming up to our door, and something grabbed me. The only thing in the room was the light. The only light in the room was shining through the curtains that from a lighted parking lot, you know, in the outside of the motel room. And something grabbed me and spun me around and pushed me up against the door with a lot of force. And when it did that, I could see the whole room from that point. And in the middle of the room was this, I'd say 6 or 7 foot thing that looked very monkeyish. I would describe it as a beast. Its eyes were glowing red, and it was jerking its head back and forth, like as if it was just placed there and didn't know where it was at and was trying to get a bearing, you know? It was very strange. And this thing, this beast, was absolutely, you know, demonic looking. And on the curtains behind it, it was three figures that, you know, that it, like the light from the outside in the parking lot was casting their shadow on the curtains. And these figures were absolutely demonic looking figures. I mean, and the only way that I could describe them is that they had very pointy features. I cannot describe it, you know, better than that. And I was absolutely, just absolutely terrified. I felt like I was dying of fright. And I'm melting down this door, like, you know, like I'm, you know, about to pass out or something. And my arms are flailing, like, you know, like they're trying to leave, but I can't go anywhere, you know? Anyhow, my hand hit the light switch, you know, while it was flailing, and the lights went on, and all that disappeared. And my friend is down in, you know, in a fetal position against the wall, and she's asking me, what, you know, what was that?
Wow.
You know, and I didn't know, you know, of course, I mean, you know, I was, you know, absolutely horrified. I've never asked anybody about this. Or
You had a glimpse, Chris, of pure evil there, I think, which brings up a question I haven't asked you yet, Dr. E. What about evil entities that are like ghost-like?
Right.
Have you ever encountered that, or someone who has?
I've had clients, patients, who have had what they call invasions, and then call them by various names. And, you know, in metaphysics, there's the belief that the worlds leak into each other, and that if people leave openings, for instance, his foray, perhaps with drugs, could be a backdoor, by metaphysical standards, a wound, in other words, where something else could enter and make an appearance. The question about an instance like his would be, what did he learn from it? What did he gain from it? What transformed him as a result of that? Those would be the questions to ask, so that the phenomenon itself is not just an isolated phenomenon, but actually leads to an evolution in the person themselves.
Okay, let's go to another caller. Sandy's in Chicago. Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for putting me on. I wanted to tell you my story a few months ago, and I never got through.
Well, you had made it this time.
Yeah, well, in the back of my old house was a cemetery. And ever since I moved in that house, things would, my dishwasher would go on by itself, lights would go on and off. Well, my older daughter was turning 13, and she invited 14 girls to spend the night for a pajama party. Only 12 showed up, and there ended up being 13-year-olds in my house. They were watching Friday the 13th, and the party was on Friday the 13th. After they got done watching the movie, one of the girls pulled out a Ouija board, and they wanted me to help them do it. And I said, that's a bunch of malarkey. I didn't believe in that. Well, we were doing it, and there was somebody telling me that I was going to get it. That's what it kept saying. Well, it was about 2 in the morning, and I told the girls they better go to bed now, you know. So I went upstairs. My husband was asleep. All I know is I wasn't asleep yet. I just laid down, and something grabbed my head. They held my arms down, but I couldn't see anybody. They were holding my legs, and I got raped by something that wasn't there. I couldn't see anything.
That happens. It does.
Well, I could move my eyes, and I could see my husband's shoulder, so I knew it wasn't him. I'm like, what is this? And then the next day, I woke up and I had hand bruises on my arms, my wrists, on my cheek. You could see that some fingerprint bruises because I was trying to fight to get this thing off me.
All right. Well, let's get Dr. E's opinion on this and take a couple more final calls, and we're out of time. Now, this I would call trauma, no doubt, Clarissa, wouldn't you?
Oh, well, there's some people who are metaphysicians say that you can experience direct physical trauma from entities that circulate in the world. And as you know, early Christianity and pre-Christianity have the ideas of the incubus and the succubus,
right,
which come in the middle of the night to have sexual relations with someone against their will, presumably. And so, again, my question would be, what did this lead you toward, or how did this help you in some way or cause you to turn away from or turn toward? In other words, you want to investigate how this affected you in addition to scaring you, in addition to hurting you, in addition. You want to see what is going on here, really. There's an interesting idea about electrical circuitry, and I've seen it in my own life, too. When we lost our firstborn grandson, I swear to you, every electronic and electrical piece of equipment began malfunctioning around all of us. Our pain was so great. Our sorrow was so unending. The disturbance of the family force field was so enormous. The phones went all red. The VCR started blinking. The stove and the clock started either dying or not working right or blinking all their blinking lights and their sounds and their beeps and everything. And there's a thought that extreme stress, including the stress, incidentally, of adolescents coming into their own, can actually cause a disturbance in the electrical field. Profound feelings of any kind can do that. And so were that a person I was working with, I would ask them about that. What, intense feeling eruption is going on, perhaps in the neighborhood or in the family or in your own life. And let's take a look at this and take it apart piece by piece and see what has made this. So we would go in a direction like that.
Okay, let's go to Richard, State of Washington. Hey, Richard, go ahead.
Hi, George, and hi, Dr. Estes. Dr. Estes, I'd also like to challenge your definition of evil. Nietzsche said that the deeper minds of all ages have had pity for animals, and yet your definition seems to exclude animals as far as being possible victims of evil.
Wait, where did you get that? I have said creatures all night long. I had said sentient beings all night long.
I'm going by the definition used at the beginning of the show.
I definitely include creatures and animals, and I would go even further. I would say the air, the land, the water, anything that nourishes others.
Hmm. All right, next up we have West Hollywood, Kate Stern. Hi, Katie, go ahead.
Hello, I am so heartened to hear the doctor talk about the people who commit these heinous, horrific crimes, that she believes there is some mental health issues, whatever, with the shooting in Colorado recently, and I'm thinking of Andrea Yates, and I'm thinking of, I'm often in the minority in my circle of friends, but I can't believe a healthy person can do those things, and I think she hits it right on the head. There's no empathy, there's no feeling for others, and that's a mental disorder.
We call it so in our culture. Maybe in another world, it might be looked at differently. But we tend to see if people are capable of peace with one another, solving problems with one another, so that they don't come to homicidal means with one another, that is what we call peaceful and ability to live with one another. And the opposite of that, the opposite of evil, incidentally, is not good. The opposite of evil is two things, as far as I can tell. It is informed love and limits. It's a form of consciousness. It's informed consciousness of loving no matter what, but also being realistic and doing what's necessary to create boundaries that will keep people from harming one.
I agree with you, Clarissa. I think most people are good people.
Yeah.
And I would say 95%.
I like that about what you say. I think that's really the magneto, as they call it, of the engine. That is it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Maybe one day we'll overcome most of the evil. It'll never stop. I don't think it'll ever stop.
We'll still have these tragedies we hear about all the time.
Well, we will do what we can.
But
there have
we
been 6 or 7 shootings since the Aurora Theater shootings, all of them threatened or carried through near or in theaters. So,
absolutely. And some of your books that are still out, Untie the Strong Woman and Woman Who Run with Wolves, still available?
Yes, they are. Thank you.
Okay, and your website.
Yours are, too. You have 3 books in the world.
Ah, don't worry about mine.
You do?
Okay. All right, thanks, Corinne. Good to have you with us, Doctor.
Thank you so much.
Okay, for Dave Bujinski, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.